Good afternoon, William. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you, Andrew. Please call me Bill.
Okay, Bill. OTC has been involved with satellites for a very long time. How did we actually get into the business? What was your first experience with satellites?
Well, it's interesting. OTC's involvement in space actually started at the dawn of the space age. That's in October 1957. The Russians put up the Sputnik satellite. And at that time, when it was announced, OTC's radio engineers at our Bryngelly radio station outside Sydney decided to see if they could track the satellite. So they switched the receivers on, found out the satellite was broadcasting at 20 megahertz, and were able to find it as it passed over Australia. They monitored that satellite, picking up the cycles at 20 megahertz, and through the interpretation of the signals, they were able to get signal strength and direction, were able to actually plot the orbit of the satellite. And this enabled OTC to prove to the world that the Soviets had in fact launched the satellite. With this done, OTC recognized that, gee, there was a possibility of looking a bit further into the heavens. And so OTC started tracking signals and doing some tests on signals going through the ionosphere instead of reflected from it, as all radio waves had been at that stage. So that was quite an interesting and historic event.
Of course, OTC was involved in radio transmissions bouncing off the ionosphere like shortwave does for quite a long time. So this would be of some relevance to your company's business at that time.
Very definitely. It was a very unique opportunity to see what happened to the radio waves when they did pass through the ionosphere rather than actually having them reflected from it. All of OTC's communications at that stage were based on HF radio. And this was just one example of some extraterrestrial testing that we were able to do with this.
So where did you go from there?
Well, at that stage, we progressed to broader satellite systems. I guess we've been in at the advent of the space age. In 1964, the International Telecommunications Satellite Organization was put together. OTC was a founding member of that nation, of that organization. This organization was set up to provide worldwide telecommunication services via satellite. Now, the technology had been proven with the Early Bird satellite in early 63. I'll have to check on that one. We might edit this a little bit because I'm not sure about these facts. But the Intelsat organization then decided that, based on, again, Arthur Clark's paper on satellite communications in Wireless World in October 1945, that by putting a transponder in the sky, you could reach one-third of the Earth's surface. Hence, with three satellites effectively operating over the ocean regions of the world, you could achieve worldwide communications. Now, this has been a dream for telephone operators for many years. Intelsat decided to act on that. In 64, this worldwide consortium was put together. It developed the Early Bird satellite, which provided the first telecommunications via satellite. OTC, as a founding member, then started building Earth stations to access those satellites once they appeared in the Pacific Ocean and the Indian Ocean, which of course are the regions that are visible from Australia. OTC's first station was built in Carnarvon, actually. NASA at the time had a tracking station out in Carnarvon.
That was, of course, built in the Gemini days, wasn't it?
Actually, built in the Gemini days, but for the Apollo program.
Right.
NASA recognized the advantage of having, rather than using the HF radio links, they wanted to use the satellite links for their comms. They knew that with the Apollo mission to the moon, they needed very reliable comms. And, of course, as the spacecraft went to the moon, the Earth rotates underneath. Different parts of the Earth would be visible to the spacecraft. Therefore, they needed tracking stations in various different parts of the world to monitor the spacecraft transmissions and to get the voice from mission control back to, well, to and from the spacecraft. So one of the better spots in the world for this type of coverage was in Australia. They certainly needed that part of the world covered, the Asian region. Carnarvon actually had a very clear sky, and for that reason, plus the advantages of English language, NASA chose to build their tracking station down here in Australia. OTC was then asked by NASA to provide communication circuits for that, and we ended up building our first satellite communication station in Carnarvon to support that station.
The first Intelsat satellite, Intelsat 1, or otherwise known as Early Bird, of course, only surfed the Atlantic. The next series, Intelsat 2, of course, was largely used by the Apollo program, wasn't it?
That's true. The Intelsat 2 series, which went into the Indian Ocean and into the Pacific Ocean. Now, with the tracking station and the geography of the world, the tracking station in Carnarvon, we used the Pacific Ocean satellite to relay the circuits back to the United States.
When did the ground stations start to be built in the East Coast then? We've got Carnarvon linked in. NASA was also using Tidbinbilla, Oral Valley at that time, and they needed to get the signal back to the States. Now, was the impetus to build the ground stations in the East a commercial one for OTC for its own communications, or was it just to service NASA initially?
Well, I'd have to point out that all of the decisions to put the stations in were commercial decisions. We certainly needed a station for NASA. They came to us and asked for a specific contract to provide services, but we were well in, we had been well into the planning of that satellite technology already, and we're planning on putting forward actually our first station on the East Coast in Moree, New South Wales. It turns out that NASA's requirement, and NASA actually asked us to move the requirement forward a little bit, so the initial station did go into Carnarvon about, let's see, in 1966. It took us another 2 years to actually get the station into Moree. So in 1968, the first station started operation in Moree in New South Wales.
That's in northern New South Wales.
That's correct. That was set up to serve the eastern states traffic. And again, due to the geography of the satellites and the Intelsat system, that could only look at the Pacific Ocean satellites. Therefore, all the East Coast traffic going to places like the United States, to Canada, and to other points in that section of the world were sent through the Moree station in New South Wales. That freed us, that allowed us to actually swing the antenna in Carnarvon to either an Indian Ocean satellite or a Pacific Ocean satellite as required.
We should perhaps point out that by Indian Ocean satellite and Pacific Ocean satellite, we mean a satellite which is rotating at the same rate that the Earth is, and therefore appears to hover over the equator, over each of those ocean areas. And below the satellite, if you look down from the satellite, you'd see about a third of the Earth centered on that ocean.
That's correct, yes.
And as seen from the Pacific Ocean, of course, from that satellite, you'd see on your right, you'd see Australia, and on the left, you'd see America.
Actually, it's the other way around, as seen from the satellite. The satellite is actually generally over the middle of the Pacific Ocean, so viewing it from the satellite, on your left-hand side would be the Asian Rim, which would obviously include North Asia, Korea, parts of China, Japan, down through Taiwan, the Philippines, Singapore, New Guinea, Indonesia, down to Australia, and also, of course, New Zealand. On the right-hand side, as again viewed from the satellite, you would find the western coast of North America, Canada, the United States, and it tapers off. The particular beams in the Pacific Ocean do not quite reach South America. The South American landmass has actually shifted a little bit too far to the right. It's sort of off the beam.
Now, most of the traffic going through that would, of course, originate in Melbourne and Sydney, and to some extent Brisbane. Why put the station at Moree, way out in not quite the outback, but certainly way out in rural New South Wales?
It's a very good question. Back in the days when that was built, the antennas needed for this for this service were very large. The signals from the satellite were quite small and weak, and you needed a very large reflector in order to collect enough energy to actually get an intelligible signal out of it. Similarly, in radiating power to the satellite, you needed a tremendous amount of power, and the microwave equipment available at the time often had spurious emissions in other parts of the band. So you needed to build a very large structure, and you also needed it located in a place where it would not interfere with other terrestrial forms of microwave communication, such as used around airports, and also telecom certainly had some
microwave links in various parts of the country. So for that reason, OTC looked around for an appropriate spot. Moree was an appropriate place on a major trunk route, a major telecom trunk route between Sydney and Brisbane, and that allowed us, it was far enough out, yet served by a landline so that we could get the appropriate telephone signals to the station for transmission overseas.
And how big was the dish?
The original dish at Moree was 27.5 meters. We, in the early 1980s, constructed a second dish at Moree, which was a 32-meter dish. Also, having lined up the East Coast traffic, or the traffic, I should say, to North America through the station in Moree, we also needed a satellite station, a communication station, which could actually look at Europe. That required transmission to an Indian Ocean satellite. We put this in Ceduna, South Australia. Again, that station was opened in 1968, the same year as Moree. Actually, 1 year later, 1969, the initial antenna there was 30 meters. In 1980, we constructed a second antenna there to cater for the growing traffic to Europe, as we did in Moree, again, a 32-meter antenna. So in both cases, we had more Intelsat satellites to look at in the 80s. We required, and more telephone traffic to both destinations, both east and west. Therefore, we required more antennas in our system.
I haven't actually been to Moree myself. However, I have some friends who have been there recently, and they actually brought back an interesting series of photographs showing that one of the antenna had been pulled down and the other one was partially dismantled. So where do you do your communications now?
Oh, that's a good question. The antenna that left Moree, the 32-meter antenna, maybe I should step back and cover some of the reasons why the site at Moree was closed. In the 80s, microwave technology had advanced tremendously. So had satellite technology. The satellites started with one of the things that happened on the satellites was that the solar arrays became larger. We learned how to actually create larger arrays to channel that power. Hence, you could build a satellite which had more power in the sky. That allowed you to radiate more power to the Earth. So number one, that allowed a downsizing, if you will, of the antenna required to radiate to the spacecraft. Secondly, advances in microwave technology also allowed the got around some of the more difficult issues with off-axis emissions. Therefore, you didn't have the spurious energy going in directions that you didn't want. You didn't have as much of it. It was down at a very minor level. And you were able, because there was more power coming from the satellite, you were able to get by with a smaller antenna. These two factors combined to allow OTC to build its stations much closer to an urban center. It provided a lot of benefits. We didn't need, we could put them much closer to the places where the majority of the telephone traffic was actually originating. With this in mind, we started rethinking our entire network. And the station at Moree was operational up until 1987 when we actually opened our new station in Oxford Falls. It's a northern suburb of Sydney. That station originally had started with one 18-meter antenna. We then built a second 18-meter antenna on the site. And with those two antennas operating, we were able to close Moree. Once we closed Moree, we dismantled the 32-meter antenna, shipped it to Sydney, and we've re-erected it in Sydney, where it now is a third antenna at our Oxford Falls site. That now gives us access to all of the Intelsat satellites above the Pacific Ocean.
You can see that those antennae, can't you, from the road?
Yes, if you wander down the road outside Oxford Falls, they're nestled in a little valley. There's a couple spots on the road where you can get a reasonable view of them, yes.
Of course, the public can't get into the actual station, can they?
No, for good reason. You wouldn't want someone tampering with your phone calls when you go overseas.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the Space Show, Bill.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure being here.